Hello and welcome back to Project Pod. Thank you so much to anyone who's listened to the podcast up until this point. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. So in pod number 5 today, we have the fabulously named Gail Loveshock. So Gail works with people who might describe themselves as spiritually inclined, people who are wanting to make changes in their life but are feeling a little bit lost at sea in the whole process, as it's so easy to feel when we're wanting to move forward but not quite sure which way to go. So through coaching and guidance and tools like meditation, Gail works to really help bring people back to themselves, to develop a deeper connection with their intuition, with their inner voice, and to use this as the really potent anchoring point for people to make decisions. So we talked a little bit about why this work is so important to Gail. We heard about her own story, and we talked about things like how important it is to move away from external validation, listen to our inner voice, and to start trusting ourselves more in making decisions and moving forward. So it was a bit of a different conversation today. As you can hear, it wasn't so much about the process of starting a business. We talked instead about these rich range of ideas that really drive what Gail does. And I hope you enjoy this week's conversation. Thanks for listening.
So I'm here with the wonderful Gail Loveshock. I've discovered you online through Project Love. I know that you have very many roles and things that you do. And I know you run retreats as well and do generally amazing healing work. I was just wondering if you could say a bit about what your role is at the moment.
Yeah, sure. And just to say as well, it's such a joy to gather with you as well. So thank you for the invitation. It's always really lovely to have a chat about, yeah, what's going on in the world. And I think that, you know, in part, that's what my role is to understand what's happening in your world, essentially. So you might just have a sense of something not being quite right. It's not that anything would be wrong, do you know what I mean? But it's kind of like, you're halfway across a bridge and you know you can't go back, but you're not sure about taking the next step forward. Because often what I find working with people is there's this idea that there's only one exit from the bridge. And really my job is to show you that there is millions and billions and billions of bridges, basically. And so you're probably spiritually curious. For example, if you're coming to me, you might have some sort of religious recovery going on as well, which is often, and indeed you may be in some form of recovery as well. So a lot of clients that I work with are definitely in some form of recovery, but we're all addicts of something, you know, spirituality included. So that's, you know, that's just kind of part of the course really. But you'll probably be, certainly with coaching and mentoring, it's interesting. I take people on longer journeys now, which is such a joy. It's, you know, a lot can happen in a few sessions, but in 6 months, it's kind of, it's like being the lioness that runs alongside the pride and is kind of going, come on, like, you've got this, you can do this, you can do this, you know, just enjoy what's happening and allow yourself to get there and see what's going on. And I think as a translator, so I do work with a lot of different modalities as well. So obviously I work very much as an intuitive coach and originally as a happiness coach, but also with the Enneagram tool, with NLP, with emotional freedom technique, with Reiki as well, with channeling much more now, and also just all of it, as I say, kind of very much as an intuitive empath. So it's very much about guidance, and it's very much about getting a sense. And if anybody works with me or Skypes me, I sort of do this thing where I'm doing it now, where I'm sort of twisting my thumbs and my first couple of fingers. It's almost like a tuning into your, you know, to your energy and what's happening with that, because we're transmitting all the time. And essentially my job really as an energy, you know, kind of magician, is to work out where your energy is at and then just help you soften it or power up if you need to. Or, yeah, as we were talking about just before we came on the call, like basically breathe properly or hydrate, or, you know, turn you to the right tools that you might need. But essentially it's guidance. It's about reclamation of the body and the self. It's very much about compassion. It's very much about taking continued steps of grace. And it's very much about, again, just you being living your purpose, which for all of us is nothing more complicated than being a full expression of the self. Now, however that shows up, you know, whatever job title that comes in, wherever you live in the world, that doesn't matter so much. Every single person's purpose is to be a full expression of their soul self, which means, you know, kind of not playing small, which means not apologizing for who you are, which means just really enjoying, nourishing and nurturing everything that you are and everything that you're experiencing, because then that means you trust yourself, which means you're not looking for external validation, which means that you're very much in a place of power. So you're kind of reaching down, you know, and Lisa Lister talks about this a lot, beautiful author and teacher, you know, you're kind of reaching down, rooting down, and you're reaching up at the same time, so that, you know, that's immovable, basically, when you're in that, when you're rooted and reaching for, again, as we were saying, you know, we're already risen. We don't have to rise. Like, we're already risen, and my job is to help you understand that, however that shows up, if it's coaching, writing, speaking, teaching, meditation, retreats. For me, it's just about getting as many people together in this lifetime so that you can go and share and teach everything in your own way as well.
Yeah, amazing, wonderful. I was just thinking, because there's so many tools and things that you use, do you have a particular favourite that you're really into at the moment that you're loving and just discovering, or?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't like to play favourites, it has to be said, but I think there is, so I've recently discovered an incredible woman called Barbara Wren. I don't know if you know her work or not, but she works a lot with cellular development, and her specialism is actually nutritional alchemy. So it's really about working with the cells right from the base level of hydration. So eradicating dis-ease, disconnection, illness in the body, from taking a cell that may well have been very healthy, but in Chinese whispers, you know, essentially as the cells, if the first cell is unhealthy, it gives a crap message to the second cell, that gives an even worse one to the third, and so it goes on. So it's like a terrible cellular Chinese whispers. Barbara's work is very much around helping cells to return to their original state, i.e. vibrating at the purest of levels, so at the highest of vibration that it can. So the messages are constantly powering up the body. So we're using, we're strong, we're able to recover, we understand what we want. We don't really have to make good or bad food choices because we just understand what's right for us. So I'm about to dive into some training with Barbara, who's she's quite elderly now as well, so I really feel that I've received my kind of apprenticeship, if you will. So that feels very much like it's bringing together everything to do with the quantum wave meditation that I'm kind of co-curating and teaching, and also just again bringing everything back to basics. So when I'm sitting with someone, you know, if you're working with me, I'll probably have told you to drop a cup of tea or coffee a day, you know, to replace that with a bit more water, to get outside. And essentially anything we can do to create conditions for growth, a little like a garden, so that we can totally cultivate your magnificence. So that for me is very much what it's about. So again, this just getting into the cells in a non-invasive and appropriate manner, using visualization, using nutritional alchemy, using nature, water, fresh air, just exactly as you would plants, basically. So I'm very interested in how we grow healthy and happy humans in a non-laboratory environment.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, in certainly what I've kind of picked up from seeing some of your work and online, is that kind of just the dynamic between us and nature, and those, the kind of the feedback that happens in between the mind and the body. I was just also thinking, I was reading something about happiness this morning, by Mark Manson, who is talking about how happiness is a lot in part the pursuit of our ideal self. That means a long route, and that means failures as well. That means whatever you want to call them. I'm so interested by this idea of, and as you were saying, working on a longer term with your clients, speaking with people who run these businesses, there is a sense of there aren't shortcuts, and this is a, it is a, it's a long route. Just as working towards our ideal self, it's like that is, it's a long route. But I just wondered what that had been like for you, really, and how that plays out in your work.
Gosh, I mean, my understanding, my interpretation is that we come in full. We come in full of love. We come in full of compassion, of joy, of bliss, of happiness, and then we sort of empty as time goes on. You know, we're kind of then put in rules and containers. You know, the first year of our lives, we're just given total free rein. If we want to mush our face in cake, we so be it. You know, if we want to strip off our clothes, so be it. You know, if we want to nap standing, you know, fine, totally fine. It's like everything is conditioned towards our pure expansion, you know, and our growth. And Dr. Robert Holden, one of my teachers, will also talk about, you know, the first time that the soul understands it's in a body. So when you start to observe children, babies and toddlers, when they start to look at themselves in a mirror, they're just fascinated because they've just worked out that they're in a body, basically. You know, they're just like, oh, this is interesting. At the same time, they're probably being told to start to sit still, to, you know, keep their shirts tucked in, and that the knife and fork have to be used. And then there's suddenly rules in school and, you know, all these different things. And then by the time the hormones kick in, puberty, teenage, etc., we've got no idea who we are anymore out, you know, kind of within ourselves. It's very, very difficult. There's certainly cases of it for sure, but historically, I would say over the last couple of hundred years, you know, we certainly start to play parts. So then by the time we get through, you know, to kind of late teens, mid-20s, and then we've made all sorts of decisions that are very much can be based on family expectations and parameters, and perhaps we've found ourselves in education systems that we didn't think we would, or indeed graduate jobs or schemes, or perhaps if we tried to bust it off, there was some kind of kickback from family and friends, you know. So, and again, the gap year, for example, is interesting because it's very much like I must go and I must find myself. You know, the translation of that also being, I have played a part for such a long time, I think I need to step out of the nest in a big way. But it's become, you know, a multi-million dollar industry, essentially, for people to begin phase one of remembering who they were before somebody told them they should be someone else, you know. Then even, you know, we get into dating, first, second, third dates, you're probably not going to act like yourself. You're probably also going to act like someone else, someone you think the other person wants to meet, even though they've asked you out on a date in the first place because they really like who you are. You go for a job interview, you're going to try and be the perfect, in inverted commas, candidate to be that, you know, uniquely in-laws, you want to be the best girlfriend, boyfriend that anybody, you know. So we're constant, so that by this point, as I call them, like the emotional overcoats, you basically can't move your body because you've just covered yourself in overcoats, you know, of these false idols, these false identities. And again, not always the case, but you know, kind of a wide sweeping evidence base as far as I've seen. So by the time people kind of come and work with me, and I have my, you know, my own experience, which I'll come on to, but by the time I've kind of, you know, got to people, they're just sussing out that life isn't really working for them anymore. And again, they might not be able to put a finger on it, but, you know, the first few sessions are very much about taking those overcoats off, a bit like, you know, doing the minimalist, you know, kind of wardrobe clearing of the soul, if you will, you know, kind of literally taking garments off and being like, does this identity suit you? Is this who you are? Yay, nay, don't know, you know. It's like are you in the autumn or the spring of your soul? Like, what colours suit you? You know, actually, if you put an outfit of yourself together, like how would that look? What I also see as well, that people have probably been through, you know, they've been through potentially some hardship or some difficulty. They might have been in challenging relationships, you know, they might have, you know, financial challenges, or they might have something that's happened that, again, a little bit of societal shame and guilt has crept in on, and they're just not quite sure how to heal through that. you know, and for myself not being a full expression of who I am showed up as I've spoken about very openly, but through a series of very like lemony snicket unfortunate events essentially, which became more and more dangerous accidents, you know, cultivating in a quite serious car crash, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, and then also ending up in an ambulance about 3 years ago whilst I was still working as a producer, working at London Fashion Week, and stress, anxiety, fear, total fear of my reputation being ruined, and my, you know, therefore never being able to feed myself or clothe myself or pay the bills, just so having taken over, because again, through exhaustion, disconnection, dehydration, lack of physical movement, lack of spiritual practice, lack of devotion. So for me, because I've come through those forms of recovery, you know, in terms of understanding, it's, I know the cost of what it is to not live a life as the person that you were born to be. And for some people that apps, and it absolutely is a life's work, because as A Course in Miracle teaches, we get to choose again and we get to choose again. And this is what we keep forgetting. We think that if we let this one person, experience, opportunity go, we'll never get another one again. But this brings us back to the bridges. There's not just one exit from the bridge, there's billions of exits, and we can't even fathom how much is available for us, because we just get used to thinking in a very, very particular way. So for sure it's a life's work, but like, wouldn't you rather that be the life's work of being truly who you are than being suffocated by overcoats that you never even wanted to wear in the first place, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's this idea that you help bring people back to themselves in a compassionate, wonderful way, without saying there's something broken or there's something that needs to be fixed, but kind of on a very gentle journey of reconnection almost. So many things that I want to speak to you about. I was thinking about this idea Daniel Laporte talks about at the moment, this idea of I'm not your guru. How do you help support people to be their own guru, to kind of find their own solutions and guide them to that reconnection without being too guru-like?
It's a good question. I'm definitely not the guru, like, either. No, nobody is. That's got us in a lot of hot water in recent years. And yeah, it's refreshing when other people are talking about it as well. Again, I think, you know, I think for me, there's even very simple strategies when gathering with groups about, you know, sitting in circles, for example, and sitting shoulder to shoulder. That is very normalizing. You know, that I learn as much from anybody else as they'll learn from me. Everyone is my teacher as much as I, and everyone else is our others as well. And, you know, and when I'm working with people, it's really interesting because I think people, again, they think it's going to be some sort of horrific coaching spiritual boot camp. And the first session is always just about getting people to soften and just getting them to share where they are, and for them to understand that there is no judgment, no expectation. However, you know, things will only change if the work is done, essentially. Now, the work could vary. It might be, for example, for people who haven't dated for a while, for example, it can be very much as simple as, I say simple, it doesn't mean it's easy, but going out and really making eye contact and smiling at other human beings, not keeping the head down, opening the windows of the soul, essentially, you know, kind of like just opening the windows and allowing the winter air out, the kind of staleness that can come again from when we're in our little hamster wheels of just going around and this is how it's always going to be, through to encouraging perhaps a small bespoke meditation that is 5 or 10 minutes, or a tally or a record, as I call it, in the observation deck of you. So something else I really love to get people to do is basically imagine they're sort of piloting their own inner witness, if you will, the witness of the witness, and just to have a little collection of observations about when and how certain traits or emotions or experiences are coming up again without judgment. And what tends to happen is that because it's very normal, for want of a better way of describing it, and then people start to really gather their own evidence, which is totally key. In gathering our own evidence, we realize that, you know, it's us, and it's, we'll realize where we're blocking or locking ourselves down, or which life areas we feel freer in. And then at that point, I can really help you to connect to the inner wise person, the inner wise man, or the inner wise woman through meditation, through guided questions, through a journey. And then again, whoop, ding, there you go. It's you connecting you. So everything that I'm doing is constantly bringing you back to you, because it is essential that at the end of the call or a workshop or a retreat, that everything you're experiencing is fully integrated into the body, so that you can take the tools and they are yours to make as your own. This is not some sort of horrific 1980s pyramid scheme where I want to keep you in therapy for like 25 years. That's like my worst nightmare. Because essentially, in a strange way, I kind of want to make myself unneeded, you know, if you will. It's like I want you to, you know, basically like invest once and have it for life. There is an element of rinse and repeat, and often, you know, kind of I say that because actually we're very simple. Like it's really all very simple when we get out of our own way, and that is my job is to unblock the blocks to you. And again, as A Course in Miracles, you know, kind of teaches, it's about us unblocking the blocks to love and remembering we are pure love, we are pure devotion, we are both divine feminine and divine masculine. You know, we have a soul's journey as a full expression of ourselves. You know, the soul cannot necessarily say that it's walked up into this existence to become a, you know, a teacher or a writer or a surfer or a, you know, a champion bowls thrower. That's, who the hell knows any of these things? You know, that just doesn't even exist. It's again, yeah, my job is to help you look in the mirror of you and to be able to hold eye contact with yourself and to like what you see. And then beautifully, wonderfully, slowly, without expectation, judgment, or heaviness, to then love the self, you know, to be able to look at the body, our body, and really love the body and honor it. And therefore, we become nourished. And again, we just desire what nourishes us. And slowly as well, just again, over time, what will happen, because it can't not, is that just more enriching patterns will evolve. More the subconscious is being reprogrammed as it's being re-educated into its original intention. You know, the mind, the little mind, the 4% that we have, just starts to have a little bit more space around it. And actually, we've got very confused with big little mind, ego, all of our inner parts. If we didn't have ego, we wouldn't get up in the morning and get dressed. You know, we wouldn't go anywhere on time. The ego wants to evolve as much as we do, and our job is to ensure that that happens. But again, everything's being bastardized over the last 10 or 15 years. So devotion has been very much about separating oneself from the ego, separating oneself from the quote unquote negative, you know, separating oneself from this. And I guarantee, if you're in that school of thought or existence, guess what? You'll be feeling separate from everybody. You'll be feeling lack from everybody. You'll be having a really bloody hard time because you have sliced yourself up and pushed the parts of you that you think aren't good enough away. When, as I often talk about, this is the invitation of the Russian dolls, and we want to bring all of our parts back in, all of them, all the wounds, all the plasters, all the gunk, and all, we want to bring it all in and get to know it and understand it. Because it's when we understand it, because again, often little mind, sometimes ego, sometimes instinct, giving us information, it's telling us the spidey sense is tingling, but we don't know how to trust it. So again, my work is about, through different, as we're talking about, the observation tech, through, you know, kind of meditation, through journaling, through journeying, through exploration, through laughter, through kinship, through you know, channeled guidance at times, through whatever is needed, you know, EFT even, to help totally reprogram, reboot, You know, we're moving the neural pathways. This is not always as straightforward as it sounds. So all of these little things in this sort of the larder, if you will, with all the little ingredients, whatever is needed, then I'll tend to be able to find the recipe that's right for you. And then it's like we bake a great big cake of joy, basically, you know, essentially what it comes down to. It's a not very short explanation.
Pretty good. I think the cake of joy sounds pretty good. I think I love the way that you talk about all these things, joining the bodily and the mind as well. I was talking to you before the call about how I'm really interested in compassionate mind therapy and this idea that we can start, you know, acknowledging our bodies and working with them, having this dialogue. And helping, as you say, there's a certain reprogramming that goes on when we are through breath, we're soothing the nervous system through changing our posture, our facial expressions, all these things that seem so small and maybe insignificant, but are so powerful. And I feel really excited at seeing this kind of these things out in the world, people, these expressions of compassion and the potential when people have that as the basis of their business, their work, the effect is just really wonderful. I was wondering why compassion is such an important thing to you and how you express that and what you see in the people that you work with when they start feeling that and expressing it.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I just didn't show myself any compassion probably for most of my life, actually. I think that's the truth. And it makes me sad. You know, it makes me sad to think that for some reason I didn't understand that, but I'd very much made a decision at some point that one of the overcoats I wore, you know, was that it basically was invincibility and strength, and that meant that vulnerability, compassion, softness were not getting a look in. It was very much survivor mode, you know, essentially, which we can all click into, and the, well, if you're not going to do it, I'll just do it and I'll start again. You know, we're kind of very good at that in our world as well. And then I again referring to the car crash, and then basically that left me extremely vulnerable. And then I couldn't really do anything for myself. Like I couldn't lift my arms to brush my hair, and I couldn't make a cup of tea, and you know, I couldn't bathe, and you know, it was just, and my speech kind of was affected as well. So I was starting sentences and then they were petering out, and I didn't know. So there was just this real, there was no getting away from it. The universe had essentially presented me with a fabulous opportunity, which was essentially to understand the gift of softness, and that we are ultimately vulnerable all of the time. There is no getting away from these like flesh suits, essentially. You know that they're just ridiculous. I don't know how we stay in them, you know, and actually without more damage happening, to be honest. You know, they're so crazy, and yet, you know, they're extraordinary as well. And so their capacity for healing and for bouncing back, and for, again, what we don't even understand at a cellular energetic level, at a wave level as well, at a vibrational level, and just this recovery, this physical recovery that I had with the most phenomenal group of people, from an acupuncturist and a very, what we would call a very forward-thinking healer, but actually she's probably kind of an ancient-thinking healer, you know, in terms of how she approached body work as well. And just knowing that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do any more than I could do, and it was going to take a long, long time. And then that also combined with essentially, you know, kind of also the body shutting down due to stress, as a little reminder that although I'd kind of technically recovered from the crash, that actually energetically and within the nerves and within the cells, really I wasn't quite as recovered as I'd anticipated. And so it was just a kind of really lovely opportunity, again, I think, to understand that what compassion gives us, which is yeah, again, it's an opportunity to choose again. It's an opportunity to like ourselves. It's an opportunity to forgive that, you know, we are in this place of vulnerability. And it's just, there's a softness to compassion which is very much sits with its bedfellows of grace and forgiveness. And when we're working with that, you know, kind of holy triangle, as it were, with grace and forgiveness and compassion, it's just such a different place to live from. It's very patient, it's very quiet. It's almost like a lullaby. You know, there is such a gentleness to it. And again, that could it be possible, coming from a place of curiosity also, could it be possible that one could live a life, a fulfilling life, a rich life across all life areas that began from this place of compassionate grief and surrender? And so that for me has very much become essentially my life's journey, my life's work. I'm very curious about, is it possible to keep returning to that softness? Because again, what it gives us the space in between me and my perception of what I think might not be right that's around me, whereas actually all I'm buying into at that point is the illusion that I think I know better than you, or how you're doing something isn't right by my standards. So let's have a fight about it. You know, let's just upper limit ourselves, as Gay Hendricks would say, and let's just, you know, create a big old kerfuffle for no reason at all. But again, you know, even in our, you know, in our relationships with our beloveds, you know, inside and outside, with work colleagues, with, you know, kind of with people online, you know, everywhere in our world, we can really, again, take a breath, take another breath, and just remember that we're seeing a mirror of what's going on in that other person's world. So let us not be that angry mirror. Let us be a compassionate, grace-filled mirror. And again, what would that be like? What would that be like? You know, and I, you know, it's too soon to say, and I don't have all the answers, but I will say that I rather like life a lot more now than I did, you know, a long time ago. I have much better relationships. You know, I have a business that I love, that I enjoy, and I have, you know, I have playfulness as well that's, you know, that's in my body and in my system. And for that, I'm very grateful. And that's, compassion also leads us to the bridge of gratitude. And when we're there, and I mean, being grateful for all of it, that the absolute BS and the trauma and the madness and the all of it, when we can simply see it as a reframe of something that we needed to learn. Although these are very, very big lessons and often hard to digest if we're in a place of pain and we can't even sense what compassion would feel like, then that's even more reason, you know, to show ourselves compassion, which could be as simple as rescheduling the diary, running a bath, buying yourself a bouquet of flowers, you know, changing the way you eat a little bit. Really, you know, having, clearing out the bookshelf and only having things that you like. These are all elements of compassion. It's all simplicity. It's everything that I'm called to share is about this. It is not going off grid per se, but it is most certainly going off system, as in the systems which no longer serve us. So my work is an invitation to come out of the illusion that you are not good enough, that you do not have enough, that you are not lovable, and that life is going to be very hard. And my invitation is that it could be simpler and easier. You absolutely are lovable and loved, and that actually you can have what you want when you realize what you want isn't in the pages of glossy magazines and on big billboards.
I think that disconnect that we are constantly kind of faced with and challenged with, whether it's that people getting distracted by things or getting lost in like a social media kind of scroll hole, how do we manage to come back to ourselves? I was also thinking about happiness. Sometimes the steroids type positivity of self-help work can be a bit like, happiness isn't positivity relentlessly, because it is relentless if you are not accepting, letting space for the crap stuff in life, which everyone has. What I love about the work of compassion is it's accepting that we will have failures and we do have rubbish days, and it feels so much better to just let that be and to know that's absolutely part of life. We're not trying to eradicate that,
Yeah, no, I really agree. And I think, you know, kind of my dive into Buddhism, for example, over the last 18 months, very much as well, also in a parallel with what, you know, you're talking about, like this idea of metta, you know, so with love, with compassion, with grace, you know, so everything with metta, you know, and in Vipassana, which is a silent meditation, which I experienced a couple of months ago for the first time. So it's 10 days of silence, which I honestly, if I could prescribe that for everybody to go in and to understand this gift of basically sitting with all of your BS and realizing and recognizing that, alas, we are very much responsible for most of our suffering, which is a hard pill to swallow, you know, because essentially it's us that's rerunning the mind stories, it's us that's reliving the experiences, it's us that's doing that. What I should have said was this. If I'd have said that, it would have been so much better. But in Vipassana, what we're taught is essentially that we will experience what are referred to as gross sensations and subtle sensations. So, you know, they're neither positive nor negative, they're neither hard nor soft, they're gross sensations and they're subtle sensations. And the gift of Vipassana, again, is non-reaction, equally to happiness, to sadness, equally to bliss as to unbliss, equally to love as to fear. So gross sensation, subtle sensation, that they are all the same essentially, you know. And so this is, there is this idea also that of course, so therefore they will all come, you know, they will all come and they will all go, you know, biblically this too shall pass, you know, it's very similar teachings, you know, it's us getting used to the fact that what we've created, if we will, is this idea of biking all the way up into the heavens, then walloping all the way back down to earth in this kind of, you know, absolute crazy up down zigzag of emotion, you know, huge experiences that we have to have because we're alive and we have to be happy, and exactly as you're talking about, the exhaustive positivity which happens, whereas, you know, and then the recovery, you know, the almost like the gin hangover, if you will, for want of a better way of describing it, you know, that occurs because we can get blissed out in a way as well. And a lot of what I share and teach and coach on is again helping people return to this place of being able to be a container for a little bit more bliss, a little bit more love, a little bit more joy. And for me, there's definitely something around this idea as well about us being able to fly in the thermals a little bit more if and when we choose to. So it's neither up, it is neither down. It's the gray, you know, it's neither the dark or the shadow, as we often hear about. It's neither the light and the heavens. It is the place in between where they meet and where they linger. The gray is truly, you know, kind of where we are at our most potent and at our most powerful. We have one foot in each. We're rooted and earthed, you know, supported, and we're also reaching, and we understand that we are in fact made of marbled color. You know, we're not a pillar of light and a pillar of dark or whatever, you know, it's really not Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. We're very much the, you know, we're right in the middle of that essentially. And when we can kind of get into that space, we can kind of look around again with playful curiosity about what's working for us, what's not working, what would we perhaps like to experience more or less of, gross sensation, subtle sensation, no judgment. You know, when we just have that understanding again about what would be nourishing for us so that we too can again become a fuller expression of ourselves. Everything softens, there's a little bit more compassion. And yeah, for sure, like the steroid crazy can't be positive all the time. It also doesn't get a look in, essentially, because there's somewhere else that we need to be, and that place is presence, and that place is now, and that place is experiencing whatever we are experiencing. Let that be laughter, let that be tears, let that be grief, let that be joy. It all has a purpose for us, and again, for ourselves, our body. You know, crying, weeping, one of the most extraordinary ways for releasing trauma, for releasing captive emotions, you know, for releasing stoic old overcoat stories that we have worn far too long. And again, my work is about helping you create space, and it's the space for you to be you, so that you take up that space, so that you are full of yourself, so that, you know, you again don't need to go outside, but you have a life that is cultivating your magnificence, where, as I call it, and we talk about it in gardening, where your companion planting is superb. So the plants and the trees that surround you have a pH balance energetically exactly that suits you. You know, so your soil is watered as you need it. And that when it's winter and the buds have fallen, as they do, we understand the cycle of life and death. All things live and all things die. You know, yogically, every night of sleep is a mini death, and we wake reborn again, gross sensation, subtle sensation, you know, being in the gray. This is what I'm interested in sharing. It is all of it. It is, you know, there's been too much of things being taught in silo and as one part of this tapestry, whereas let's get to the back of the tapestry, which, to be honest, you know, is truly an absolute bloody mess, you know, at the back of the tapestry. And that's the reality. The back end is shocking, but the front end is where we begin much later on beyond the mess to see what the picture really is and to see what magic we hold in us. And when we discover this potency, when we begin to trust this, when we experiment with it, when we realize, you know, that it is that we have the power to create and curate a life that we want, then again, this is a really, really interesting place to start to live from. And it will be different for everyone. And so it should be, you know, so it should be.
What you were saying there about the trust and experimentation, I'm really, really interested by that point where we let go and privilege that side ourselves a bit more, to kind of turning down the inner critic a bit more and kind of saying, okay, I'm going to trust myself a bit with this. I don't know where it's going. You know, I'm thinking of experience of school or of work where you're trying to kind of aim for this clear, you're being told you need to aim for this thing without the experimenting. Yeah, just interested how you see that tipping point in people, and if I don't know if that's something that you've seen.
Oh my goodness, yes. And I think it's multiple tipping points. It's like tipping after tipping after tipping. I think we have to get used to that as well. It's you know, I always give the example of like climbing Kilimanjaro, for example. It's like you zigzag up and down that mountain, and then just as you think you've got to the top, they bloody bring you back down to base camp, and then you have to go all the, you know, because you're acclimatizing essentially. You know, we have to acclimatize to discovering more of our greatness as well, which is acclimatization and trust for me are also very good bedfellows. You know, we can often create things, you know, we can get a job which is very well paid, or different things happen, or we find a lover who, you know, we're very satisfied and happy with, and then something will happen and the ripple of questioning of self-doubt of the inner critic will pop in. And so then, you know, kind of in a game of snakes and ladders, we might, you know, kind of end up back down a little snake, kind of wondering what in heaven's name's happened. The truth is we missed the step of acclimatizing, or plateauing, if you will. You know, and again, another one of my teachers, Tony Robbins, speaks about that very beautifully, where he'll say, you know, the wise man will basically just sit during a plateau, and he'll hang out at the edge of the mountain. He'll take in the view. He'll enjoy the respite. He'll have a bit of reflection. He'll ponder how the experiment had gone so far. Did the methodology work, for example? Were the outcomes as anticipated, or is there new data, new insight? You know, very much the perfectionist, the driver, the person being driven by the inner critic, they will be zigzagging, ping-ponging all over the place, jumping up and down, kind of almost wasting valuable life energy, trying to go, whereas actually sometimes it's absolutely okay and indeed necessary for the human body to rest and recalibrate and do things. It is, you know, there's a reason, for example, that as part of your, say you were training in CrossFit, or for any type of, you know, kind of Olympic gold, you will be having multiple growth naps throughout your training process. You know, you will be allowing the body to formulate, and again, the system to reboot. And I think, you know, the inner critic, again, very important to meet it, to have a conversation with it, meet it in meditation, meet it, take it for imaginary dinner. Inner critic, what information do you have for me? What's real? What's imagined? What experiences similar to this have we had that have led us to a pain point that in a very peculiar way, inner critic, you are trying to rescue me from so that I don't feel those feelings again, because this is how you're showing up for me. And we can do that with any emotion or any story that shows up. Sit down with it, have a conversation with it, learn from it. Again, it's all data, it's all insight, it's all incredibly important, but we skip it. It's like we skip, this is what we talk about when people say they skip the work. This is kind of what we're talking about. I'm feeling this, this, and this, and I want to numb it, dull it, get rid of it, avoid it, procrastinate. We're undisciplined, and it truly is being undisciplined in sitting with, in truth, any of our feelings, emotions, or experiences, gross sensation or subtle sensation. We find it very, very difficult to sit. But again, coming from a place of curiosity, imagine being able to sit down with a cup of tea and just in your mind, you know, or perhaps with a notebook, a pen, etc., you know, or even a really a trusted buddy or indeed a coach, you know, say the inner critic is telling me this. And so we can begin the line of questioning. We can begin the curiosity. Okay, so what? So what is that telling us? Okay, well, actually it's this. Okay, so what? So what comes, so what's underneath, what's underneath, what's underneath? You know, and again, once that's out on the table, there's no boogeymen under the bed, essentially. There's nothing hiding in the shadows or the woods. We see the emotion for what it is, whatever that might be. We have the data. Then we can make an informed choice to take an active step forward, or indeed to sit on the side of the mountain for a little bit more whilst we acclimatize to a new level of, say, of happiness, or a body change through health and commitment to nourishment, or the idea that it might be okay to go part-time, or that it's okay to maybe get a new babysitter that allows you and your partner to have a date night, which creates anticipation, which creates intoxication, which creates all other beautiful rainbow in the cells of the body, you know. And when we're having that conversation, that's how we begin to learn to trust ourselves, because we are in meditation with ourselves. We are enlightened inside by taking again all the data, all the insights that we have, and knowing it is safe to trust the data. But we'll only know that if we run the numbers. You know, it's like running the numbers over and over. If we're just constantly adding things to different, you know, pots and being like, well, I don't know what that experiment was, that all went a bit awry. Like, if we don't hold the data, then we can't essentially move on from it. And to again use a gardening kind of example, if I may, in terms of trust, we'd never go and dig up a seed. Once you plant a seed in the garden, you understand that it will come up, it will grow. And if it doesn't grow, it's not like we go and dig it back up again and check it, because we want to know what's happening to it. It might come back next season. Often flowers and plants season every, you know, they sprout, they grow every other year. Our ideas, our miracles, our plans, everything that we're looking for, that we're kind of rooting for in ourselves, we have to treat like the seeds of a garden. We can't keep digging them up, because of course what the evidence will then be is that this process, this experiment, this line of curiosity and question isn't working. And how can it work? Because it's not been allowed to incubate, it's not been allowed to grow, it's not been allowed to root, and it's not being allowed to reach. And this is our job. Our job is to allow, as I talk about a lot, that things do take time. And this brings us beautifully back to, you know, that this is a life's work, and this is what we're here to do. But again, gather data, gather insight, trust the self, learn, experiment, explore, be playful, be curious, be potent, and allow yourself, when you begin to discover what's sometimes called Shakti or Kundalini or life force, when you begin to feel it in the body, what happens from the base of the spine all the way up through the spine into the brain is the impulse to move, the impulse to co-create, the impulse to nurture. That's often what we drown out with social media, the remote control online. We'll get a sense of, you know, that we want to do something, but we're not sure what it is. It's like, allow yourself to be moved and just see what happens. Now, you might just end up that you need a wee that you haven't had for 5 hours because you've been looking at Instagram, you know, but that's a win. It might be that you're hungry and you haven't eaten because you wanted to hit that deadline. It might be actually that you want to go and play with the kids or give your beloved a kiss, or you want to clear a single shelf out again so you create more simplicity. But again, it is when we reconnect him, when we work on really the internal soul ears, as I think of them, and of turning the volume of ourselves up, when we can have that conversation, this again makes it very easy for us to understand what basically magnetizes us and makes us feel potent, as opposed to what drains us and makes us feel like there is nothing on earth that could get us to move off the sofa and put the bag of chips down. Now, I know which one I would rather be living in, but it is a constant to and fro dance. And there are cyclically times when we're going to just have to sit, plateau, reflect, and read the insights.
Yeah, it really sings to me, that whole concept of having of seasons as well in our work, in life, and having those, you know, the autumn, the winter, the quiet times. I'm really interested kind of hearing, I know people like Kate Northrup have started talking about working cyclically and, you know, having not this kind of frenetic output the whole time, that actually there are times where you just need to, yeah, where things need to go quiet and reflective times to start rebuilding.
Absolutely. And again, it's that gross sensation, subtle sensation, life and death. You know, it's you know, again, Buddhism teaches that really it's not even how we live necessarily, but it is very much about how we die and which mind we die in. You know, will we die in the mind of bitter, angry, jealous, resentful, regret mind? And imagine in Buddhism, you know, through reincarnation, you would be reborn in that mind state. I mean, I personally find that really disconcerting. I find it quite unpalatable, actually. It has almost a bitter metal taste to it, you know. Whereas again, if we die in compassion, in love, in metta, you know, with grace, with resourcefulness, with humor, with understanding, with forgiveness, with acceptance for our flaws and our joys all in one, then that is a mind that I would very much like to pass into the next lifetime with. And that lifetime will begin in the morning when I wake anew. It is not simply waiting until this vessel is complete and the heartbeat is done. Which mind will you die in tonight? You know, which mind will you go to sleep in? Which mind will you wake in? Again, we have become very undisciplined, and we do need to do, you know, we need to take a little bit more responsibility for showing up for ourselves first. You know, I can often be very firm around this as well. Again, it's, you know, kind of to be in the journey of the self. And again, you know, to weed the garden of us. It's not, nobody wants to do it. I mean, who wants to do that? You know, I mean, it's just hard labor. Nobody's interested in doing it. But again, you know, it is that, you know, it's the feng shui of the inner soul. When we can clear space for ourselves, the body just expands and we have more flexibility. The fascia might even move because our mind is moving, you know. And that's the truth of yoga. Yoga is very much about yogic mind, flexibility of mind, not always of body. It matters not if you can do a handstand, if you cannot sit in compassion and surrender and grace. They're just, again, you know, this is our world that we're exploring, that we're co-creating, this bridge that we're on, with billions and billions and billions of bridges out the other side. And for me, just feel it as a deep, deep blessing that this be a lifetime of work for my own self, for my own heart. I mean, could it be possible, for example, to get myself to a point of actually vibrating at 528 hertz, which is the vibration of love? Could I do that cellularly? Is that possible? You know, I mean, I like to think yes, but I'll have at least a good 50 or 60 years to work it out in the laboratory that's me, And then this can also be shared, you know, with the world as people need it, you know, and my job is to be available. My job is to empty of what I think you need. And my job is to work with you to really find the truth of what that medicine bundle is, essentially. So however that shows up and however you show up, then I will be very available for that meeting when it's supposed to happen.
I think that's a fantastic note to end things on, Gail. Thank you so, so much. It's been really wonderful. I just wanted to ask, where can people find you to find out more about your work?
Yeah, sure. Well, the website being continually updated, she says, forcing herself to ensure it's continually updated. So Gail Schock, and Schock is SCHOCK.love. So GailSchock.love. And Instagram, which is Gail_LoveSchock. So Gail_LoveSchock. So I very much spend time. I treat that as my daily prescription pad. So basically I just drop a little bit of a kind of medicine bomb every morning, and certainly with live and any events, etc., that are going on, you can find on Instagram or on the website. And then also Blush Love Retreats, and with my co-creatrix, Kate Taylor. So if you would like a week of magic, then that's entirely possible. But yeah, I'm always available for Skype chats, cups of tea, discovery. It's not fake, you know, this is about relationships. I hope to be in a relationship with each and every one of you for decades to come, but I certainly don't hope to be your coach for decades to come. So that's a very important distinction for me as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Gail. Bye.
Bye.